Hello and welcome to the Green Room at Furnitubes. I'm your host, Catherine Barrett, and we're here every month with a new episode. Join us for industry musings, interviews, and discussions exploring all things landscape architecture, street furniture, and urban design. I'm joined today by Fiona Cummings, the Environment and Sustainability Officer at Marlborough Highways, which is a new role that was created at the beginning of last year. So Fiona's been in her role for a year, and Fiona's here to talk to us today about her role, what Marlborough Highways is doing, and some of the things that she's learnt over the last year within the construction industry. Hi Fiona, how are you?
I'm very well, Catherine, how are you?
Thanks for coming on to talk to us. This is our first podcast of 2023.
Kicking it off with a bang.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about you and your journey to this role at Marlborough Highways.
I would never like to say it's been straightforward, let's put it that way. So I did the usual. I was very lost in life, went to university, grew up a lot. Found out a lot about myself. I did a Bachelor's of Science in Global Development and International Relations. So there was parts of sustainability within that degree. It was very much human geography, social elements, you know, politics as well. And then I came to the end of my university degree, having a rough idea of where I wanted to be, but still not 100%. You know, my degree was so broad, I realised I needed to specialise and really home in to what I was interested in. I then went and studied my master's degree and I did it in renewable energy. So that was me really taking the step to go down the climate change sustainability, obviously in renewable energy side of things. And yeah, obviously that was a journey in itself because sustainability is such a broad spectrum. And I'd thought, right, renewable energy, I'm going to go work for Siemens, you know, and that's where I want to be.
Yeah.
And then I hit the job market and, well, that was a challenge in itself. And then I ended up at Mid and South Essex NHS Foundation Trust as an environment and sustainability officer, basically what I do at Marlborough now. And I had a great time at the NHS. There was a lot of issues in the NHS, a lot of struggles, and there's a lot on the news about, you know, NHS workers. It affects every part of the NHS right down to the sustainability side. And I felt whilst I was making some substantial difference, I wanted to still be doing more. And I felt there was a ceiling at the NHS for me.
Yep.
So I was just shopping around, as you do. I'd been offered a job at Essex Police doing environment and sustainability. And I said to myself, yes, that's what I'm going to do. I've got job security, public sector. And Marlborough was like the last interview I did. And I just walked in and knew at that point, I walked in, sat in that interview and they said, whatever you want to do, we're going to make it happen. And I have never worked in this industry before. I had no idea. But for me, it was the attitude that really reeled me in. They were like, this is new to us as a business. We're going to help you, teach you about the highways. You're going to have to teach us. But anything you want to do, there is basically no ceiling for you at Marlborough. I'm a year in. I've still got so much to learn, not just about sustainability, but the highways. And yeah, it's a work in progress for myself and the business.
It was a role that's been created, so it's a very warm welcome. It's been recognised by Marlborough Highways that it's really important. Was there quite a lot of education that you needed to do within the organisation? How did you go about educating the business, or did you not have to do that?
In my role, I'm kind of sat in the middle of two departments. So I form part of the QHSCE department. I'm the E at the end. So that's the health and safety side of the business. So when I'm an environment and sustainability officer, the environment side, that's more with the health and safety. That is the guys on the ground, guys and girls on the ground, you know, and how we can improve what we're doing out there, not only from a health and safety point of view, but with the mindset of the environment as well, encompassing
yes.
that.
Yeah.
And then the sustainability side is very much corporate level, part of social value, which social value is a very new term. You'll probably hear it thrown around a lot. But that is us going out to our local communities, going out to schools, educating children. I've delivered some couple of sessions in Barking and Dagenham recently.
Right.
It's two roles mashed into one. I've got to keep up with my corporate reporting. I've got to make sure everybody's safe on the ground. And it's transitioning us as part of a business of we need to be safe. We need to provide for our communities, but we also need to benefit our environment and protect it where possible. And it has got its challenges. And I would say that my health and safety director, even though this is a new role, this has been something he's been preaching for a long time.
Oh, so you've got that support already.
Yeah, and that's the thing you see in all of our accreditations now and stuff like that. Health and safety and environment in particular are becoming hand in hand. All the literature you now read, it's all becoming one. And all of the health and safety officers that we have in the business now who predated me, they also was conscious about that, because you think a lot of people, they've been with the business for a long time, but they've also come from potentially some of our competitors, you know, so it's that shared knowledge. So there's been a base understanding, I would say, from the majority of people that work from Marlborough, but there has not been that application to how we change as a business, which is why they invested in my role and where I sit in the business.
And what about the industry that we all work in, the construction industry? What are your observations about the industry? Is there still quite a lot to learn? Councils, suppliers, competitors, how fast do you feel we're moving? Is it being pushed by the companies themselves?
Yeah, so my only comparison is obviously with my time at the NHS, but when I was at the NHS, there would be innovation grants and they would come up every couple of months.
Right.
And there would be that push from government level or universities, yeah, and there would be funding for innovation. That was them going, we've got a pot of money, please come up with an idea. We've got issues. So the one we did at the NHS, we were having issues with renal patients, with their outpatient care, and they'd get a bus that was provided for by the hospital and it would go to and from. It potentially revisit the same road multiple times, but there was no joined up thinking. So that was a big piece that I did with my colleagues then. But that level of innovation, that was driving us to do that project for months and months and months. And it was every department that was involved. And I came here, and in terms of innovation and that push from the top level, i.e. the government, universities, there does seem to be an absence of that.
Right.
That is from my personal experience.
So grants and funding, yeah, to support innovation and sustainability and environment.
Yeah, so it's two ways you look at it. You've got universities, government, obviously the government feeds through down through the universities for research.
Yes.
You've got that push, or you've then got it from bottom up as such. But you've got the suppliers who have got their own objectives to meet.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're coming up with the new ideas, the new materials, the new ways to source our materials. They then talk to us. We've got to find a new way of supplying it, sourcing it, applying it to the road. And then we've got to sell it to the council. And the council have their own objectives. So you think in this chain, we've got three different entities which have a completely different driving force. We've got people there to make money, people to sell, people to supply, people to get the end product. And they've all got their own agendas, which is environment. They've all got their own targets, their own ambitions for net zero. You know, all the jargon phrases you hear is thrown out there. But we've all got to sing on the same hymn sheet.
You've got to be aligned, haven't you?
And that's where normally you have grants, research, and that pulls all those forces together. I feel that there is a big gap at the moment. So as the middle players in that chain, we do a lot of liaising up the supply chain and down to our council members. And it sounds difficult, but if I'm honest, it's not, because we're all heading in the same direction. We just need to get on the same road. Forgive the highway puns, but we, you know, yeah, we're
no, but that makes sense. Everyone knows where they want to get to, but there might be different routes to get there.
Yeah, exactly. You said about pace and where we're really at. I would say we're behind. I can't be the person that sits there and goes, oh, yeah, we're absolutely amazing, you know.
Right.
As an industry whole, and it's not just highways, you think of construction as a whole, we are behind simply because there hasn't been that driving force for innovation. Our suppliers are helping us, the council are helping us, we will get there. But you think in terms of transport, where we are benched against transport, and you think 10 years ago, electric cars,
yeah,
how many were on the market, what the product was looking like. It was very much in the early doors at that point, and you know, they've really bumped up. We haven't, but at the same time, our industry is not as straightforward.
Yep.
The fundamentals of what we do produce fossil fuels. We can't hide from that. We can't hide from the fact we need to repair the roads. I know a lot of people will complain that there's still potholes on the road, but yep, you know, it's never as straightforward. And the transport industry, when it started, wouldn't have been straightforward, and it never is. But there's at one point a turning point. They call it the tipping point.
That's really good.
Where you've put all the funding you need, all the research, and there will be a break in your industry. And that is soon coming for us. The difference of us is, as a business and other people in our sector, we are ready for that. We are pushing for that. We're not sitting in God's hands waiting for it to happen. We are the drivers of it.
And are you finding councils also having a requirement for some of the targets that you need to meet or services that you need to provide in a more sustainable way? Are they asking for reporting as well?
The council have been a very key point for us as a business, in the sense of the bids we go for, the percentage now, you'll have your criteria that you have to meet and they'll have a certain weighting. Environment now is creeping up. It yep, really is. And you think, we are big players amongst our industry, but we've got even bigger players out there. You know, there's that edge of competitiveness that it sparks
yeah,
amongst all of us. And they are the ones driving that. If we're not doing our environmental credentials, if we're not offering something better than someone else, we don't win the bid. And this is something that sustainability is not easy, because at the end of the day, we are still a business. We still need to make money. We still need to have a turnover. Our business model needs to incorporate sustainability. Sustainability is not cheap. It doesn't always save you money. It sometimes costs you an arm and a leg. But in order to be sustainable as a business model, we need to incorporate that into how we work. And a lot of the times, sustainability initiatives aren't quite ready for our industry, but we sit there and we go, do we wait for it to be ready or do we change how we work?
Yeah.
Councils, you know, they're pushing us hard, sometimes pushing the boat, they can be, but they know we've got no other choice. So that is where we're getting our push. You know, I'm saying that we don't have innovation, we don't have grants. The council are the ones that they have their own targets, their own goals, and they need us to succeed working in partnership with them. And with the reporting side of things, obviously we have to report every single bit of movement that our vehicles do.
Yep.
The materials that we source, the waste we produce, we have to report that, and we provide that to the council because they obviously take it onwards for their own purposes. And then we also rely on our suppliers to give us information. So it's back again to that three-way chain of working in tangent together. And yeah, the council, their ambition will grow, ours will grow, and so will our suppliers. And together, that three-way chain will be exempt from outside of the government's influence at that point, because we're just kind of doing it solo.
Yeah, and absolutely. You're telling me part of the role of playing in with the councils and with bids is a carbon calculator that you built. What role does that have in your relationship with councils or going after tenders or frameworks, and how do you use it? And is that a key part or is it just a part?
I would say that it is a part of the big process, yep, because there's a lot of wheels that turn in relation to sustainability. The carbon calculator allows us to really benchmark our progress towards reducing our carbon footprint.
Yep.
We have a company called Carbon Footprint Limited. They provided all of our annual reports, you know, before me.
Yeah.
Because even though there wasn't a me before January last year, the business was still conscious of it. So they had a consultant come out.
Yep.
And our directors basically said, the information you provide us of what our footprint is, we want to provide to our clients. So myself and the health and safety director, we sat with the consultants and built this carbon calculator. I like to say it's nice and fancy. It's an Excel spreadsheet, but the fancy.
Oh, most of the best things are.
Oh, yeah, but the fancy's in the colouring. There's nice colours. But yeah, it's the calculations behind it. And where I was talking about our relationship with governments and innovations, government released some conversion factors. So to give you an idea, I could be selling trade secrets right now, but here we go.
Heard it here first.
Yeah, heard it here first. So basically, you get so many litres of diesel that we've used on a job.
Yep.
This conversion yep, factor will turn that into kilograms of CO2 equivalent produced.
Got it.
So carbon dioxide equivalent. And the equivalent part is basically, if we had carbon dioxide on its own, we compare it to nitrous oxide, all the big words, how do you kind of compare them? But you include an equivalent, you kind of set a level playing field across all the greenhouse gases.
So the government have given a kind of an approved conversion factor for a number of raw materials so that everyone's working off the same rates.
Exactly, yeah. But the difficulty is, so diesel and petrol and all those, there's a big long list. They've got a bigger Excel spreadsheet than me.
Yeah.
But they basically try to encompass life cycle emissions. So to think of diesel, that's from the extraction to the transportation to it going into your fuel pump, to it going in your car, to it coming out your tailpipe. That's how that conversion factor tries to work. Diesel, oh, we all know this. The government's hand in hand with the oil companies at the moment. There's not going to be any gap of information missing on that one. But asphalt, concrete, to capture that into a conversion factor, the life cycle emissions, it's very vague. You know, there's not a lot of information. So you'll see it's a big list and it will come under construction or materials. And a lot of the conversions, asphalt, concrete, you know, the conversions will be the same conversion because they've picked a standard rate. And that also incorporates with waste as well. So it's a figure we've got at the moment, but we are waiting for the government to give us something more precise. But that's what we've got to work with. Everybody's using those figures. So basically what we do is we stick in the litres we used on the job, the materials we've used by tonnage and waste by tonnage that we produced, stick it into this nice coloured spreadsheet. It spits out some nice figures and then we give that to the client. And then where the carbon calculator really comes into its own, I'm making it sound like my job is quite easy. I've really got to big myself up more here, honestly. I just put numbers into a spreadsheet. It does it all for me. But yeah, this carbon calculator, we can then identify, right, you used hot asphalt.
Right.
That would be laid at a certain temperature. If you was to use warm, which is laid at a lower temperature, you would reduce your carbon footprint by X. And this is where I will have a moment to big myself up. The government conversion factors do not consider hot, warm or cold asphalt. It's just one temperature. So we've had to speak to our suppliers and kind of come up with that figure ourselves here at Marlborough. Everybody has a version. We have started to make it industry specific. And that's
added a layer of precision on top. I think the important thing is unless you can measure it, you can't improve it.
Exactly.
Right? So measuring is important. And now you can look at, well, what's better, hot, warm or cold, and then offer those as options or actually choose the best option and say that's what we're going to offer because it's got a lower carbon footprint.
Exactly. And the thing is, this carbon calculator, it's an element of influence that we're doing towards the council, because the design, the materials, that is all stipulated by the council.
Right.
We can kind of drop it in there, think about this, think about that, but there are limitations. Especially with the freezing cold at the moment, we can't lay warm.
Right.
We can only do hot.
Yep.
So, you know, there are limitations, but this carbon calculator and our project managers, you know, we can give them options to do, but this gives them the hardcore facts. We then use the carbon calculator to offset.
Yeah.
It's that scary word of offset. But for every ton of carbon dioxide equivalent we produce on a contract, let's say for one of our clients, we will plant one tree per ton. So there's kind of the element of, we appreciate we've produced carbon through the contract, can't hide from that, but to give back, we're going to plant a tree. That one tree is a WIP. It comes in a little pot. But that over its year, it will probably absorb minute amount of carbon. But over the 30 plus years that it's there, it will offset the year that we've produced carbon and more. It's never straightforward. I can't just go like planting full-blown oak trees. I'd like to, but you know, but that's where the clients, the councils, they can see, right, through doing this work, you've produced this amount. We could have actually reduced it by this. You know, it's that educating and sharing of knowledge, hard facts. And our project managers and myself and also the directors having those conversations with them to educate. And they will educate us as well. But at the end of the day, the decisions of how a road is built, designed, repaired, the decision comes from the council, comes out of their pocket.
Yeah.
We've all got a role to play. And that's where this carbon calculator can really show them, because none of them in the council, they're going to be highway specialists, but they won't be environmental highway specialists. That's why they select us. And a lot of the times they love the carbon calculator in the bid. It's something that really helps us go a long way. And then as part of that, that will then drive other corporate sustainability initiatives, because it's not just about what we're doing on the road for the councils, it's what we're doing as a business in our depots. These factors is what we really send upstairs to the directors, and that's where we really make the change.
Right. Well, that leads me on to another question. Well, I'll ask it now. I want to come back to the tree planting, though, because I'm interested where that is. But what action then out of all of these has the most impact at Marlborough? So it's really interesting how you're talking about the carbon footprint can really help drive a project, but also there's a lot to be driven up kind of at a corporate level. What out of everything that you're doing or everything that you could do would have the most impact at Marlborough Highways in the work that you do?
The big thing that drives sustainability, one, how deep's your wallet? That's a factor, because it's not cheap. It's really not. It's funny, we've just done a case study, and for our electric vehicles, it's more expensive to charge our electric vehicles than it is to run a diesel car, which before the energy crisis, we was saving some money when we went electric. You know, it's the small things like outsource factors like that that we have no control over. But the big part is behaviour change. That is the biggest hurdle that I or anybody in a business will face in terms of sustainability, because I am one person over 500 plus employees. I can't be everywhere in this business, and I need the buy-in of everybody in this business. If I can get everybody's conscious mindset to have one thought, that will be enough for me. But the project managers, when they're designing the roads, I want them to sit there and go, hang on, is there a way we can sustainably do it better? Is there a way we can produce more green initiatives? Can we introduce a green space into this and have those conversations? Because I'm not sat in the meetings with the councils.
Right.
The directors, you know, if they're bringing out a new policy, how is this going to affect our environmental credentials? Is there going to be any crossover there? And it's everything down to our health and safety. Our health and safety guys, when they're out there doing audits, have they got a checklist that's got some environmental elements? Because I go out and do my audits, but as I said, there's only one of me. And the behaviour change is going to be the biggest part. And it's not just for us as an industry, our suppliers, council. Again, that three chain, if we can get everybody buying into the idea of sustainability, the moment we've done that, we've taken the biggest leaps and bounds we ever could as a business.
Well, that's the change to like the flywheel, isn't it? As soon as sustainability is kind of one of the factors or the drivers of every decision that are made, that then you just become self-fulfilling. Well, not self-fulfilling, but it just drives it better and better and better.
Because it's all the small things. It's quite interesting when you talk about behaviour change. It's also the difficult part is what you do at home is what you'll most likely do at work.
Yeah.
You know, it becomes a way of life. And I'm not saying you have to be a David Attenborough 24/7, but the conscious decisions you make at home will always reflect at work. How do I, as somebody in a workforce, change someone's behaviour, yes, their way of thinking? You know, they're sat out on the yards. I need them to switch their vehicles off so they're not idling. But when they're sat at home, they're probably doing the same thing. You know, sometimes it's conscious decision. A lot of the times it's lack of education and lack of awareness, because I'll go out to one of the guys and go, can you switch your engine off? They'll go, oh, well, I want to keep warm. That is a valid point.
Yeah.
But do you know what it's doing to the environment? And I could say the one good thing about Marlborough is everybody's got the time for me here. Everybody. They'll listen to me, even for 5 minutes. But, you know, they understand that this is the way the business is going. So I get nothing but acceptance from them. But behaviour change doesn't happen overnight. So it's top of bought in. But the real people that are going to make the difference, drive the business, drive our industry, is the bottom end. And it's our operatives on the road. It's everybody. It's our account ladies in the office. It's everybody. It's every walk of life is in this business, and everybody needs to buy into it.
Going back to the carbon calculator and being able to show a client, you know, the carbon footprint of a project and what you can do to offset it. So one question was, does that mean that you can make projects carbon neutral? you can offer that by planting a tree, you can offset carbon completely. Is that right?
Yeah, so carbon neutral, it's a very difficult one, and that is one of them jargon words, you know, that you end up hearing a lot of the time. Offsetting, for people in my business environment, it's not a great word at the moment. It's not.
No, because you want to reduce the carbon footprint, not just offset it, right?
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Yep. Exactly. So it's a term, greenwashing.
Yep.
It's basically offsetting is viewed at the moment, rightly so, yep, that businesses can continue how they work
and
as long as they've got the money.
Yeah.
Just put some trees down somewhere. And as a business, we have offset. We have offset our scope 1 and 2 emissions corporately. And we've done it through an accredited scheme, which was a solar panel farm in India, of all places. But there is no certified offsetting scheme in the UK. So it's part of the Sustainable Development Goals. It's also about alleviating poverty. You know, sustainability is not just about the environment. It's a lot bigger picture. So that's also an element that we're producing emissions in this country, but we're having to use schemes offshore,
right,
which, you know, is thinking, how are we helping preserve our local habitats, our natural wildlife? You know, because it's not just about dumping a tree. You've got to think of the extra benefits of what the tree planting brings to the local biodiversity. But for us, we could realistically get a generic figure. We don't have to use a carbon calculator. We can go, right, there's this many cars, this much material, you know, and just give them a generic figure. We give them the carbon output for each individual job. So it's not a monthly thing. It's not a monthly total per individual job. At the moment, offsetting is the best we have got in this industry. You will not be able to point to a single person in this industry that's carbon neutral, as per se, without an element of offsetting. Like I said, with the trees, you plant the trees, that tree is not going to absorb any CO2 until 5+ years. So to say a scheme is carbon neutral, it's a bit of a grey area. Let's be honest, it is. There's national highways, have done plenty of schemes. You'll see on the news, they are carbon neutral. They're carbon neutral while they still use diesel vehicles. So it is the best we have got, and I'm not to ever shoot down carbon neutrality. We are still going for it as a business.
Absolutely.
But it's a grey because there's still fossil fuels, but it's still a positive step. And for us, using this carbon calculator, we're not just continuing business as usual. We're doing reductions with materials. The carbon calculator will also highlight where we've used recycled materials. So on our Essex contract, I've just actually recently done it this morning. In October, we used 259 tons of recycled concrete.
That's amazing.
I don't normally know the figures, but I've literally done it this morning. But that's what the carbon calculator also captures. It captures when we've diverted waste from landfill. It captures where we've used recycled materials. It's not just, here's your carbon, let's get on with business, let's plant some trees. We have highlighted where we've done well as a business, where we can improve as a business, and the trees is a supplementary part of it.
That, I think, is a really important part. And I agree, it's focusing on reducing the footprint to start with, not basically topping up with planting trees. What could be the biggest driver in reducing the carbon footprint in the next 5 years? Seen what you've seen in the last 12 months?
Yeah, so I'd say in terms of waste, our waste suppliers, our waste contractors, they're very good at diverting from landfill. So that one of our strongest points. We divert 100% of construction waste from landfill. A lot of it will be recycled on the job. And like we were discussing earlier, as a business, we're investing in our own recycling facilities within the business. So we don't have to outsource that. We mentioned transport with the electric vehicle. That will come when it's ready to. The range is really not that good. So that's a struggle for us. But our biggest producer of carbon is our materials. Where we've got to look at as a business, you've got the waste hierarchy, which is a big pyramid of nice colours of reduce, reuse, recycle. The biggest part we've got to look at as a business is our materials. So where possible, it starts with the project managers. Where the council said, this road isn't great, can we repair it or do a whole new road? You know, that's a conscious decision where it will affect the amount of materials we use. Depending on the work we are doing with said materials, is it going to be worthwhile doing an eco option? Because there actually are a lot of eco options. I've just looked at an eco-packed concrete, which I think they said was 25% reduction in carbon emissions from the use of this concrete. That concrete, will it last as long as the current concrete we use? Because a lot of these eco options, they're good for the moment you are laying them because they have got a reduced carbon footprint through its sourcing, through its production, through its transportation, through its going to the road. But is it going to last as long? Because that's where it's a difficult balancing act, because we go, right, we've put down this eco concrete. Amazing. 2 years' time, the council come back and go, you're going to have to redo that again. And you've got to look in the comparison of the carbon footprint. And this is where sustainability is not black and white. It is not straightforward. If it was straightforward, they wouldn't have to hire somebody like me or have a whole department for something like this. So that's where you've got to look at the relativeness of your carbon footprint and
right.
the life cycle of what you do. And materials takes up such a big amount because of the sheer tonnage that we use, you know, we get in, and it is our largest proportion of Marlborough's carbon footprint. So, like I said, it's not all sad news, you know, we are getting there, but it's out of every single part of, you know, because your emissions are broken down into scopes. There's the electricity you use, there's the transport, there's the materials, there's waste. There's also, really weird, people working from home is part of your corporate emissions. Out of all of them, materials is our biggest struggle. And that's where you see the big carbon neutral projects that happen is they've had to offset mostly the materials. They've had electric diggers, they've had electric plant. You know, there is options, and those are options that Marlborough also utilise, but materials at the end of the day, you can't escape it. And that's when you see carbon neutral projects, the offset is mostly for the materials.
Materials. That makes sense. That means that sustainability, is it going to change the landscape of highways design and planning? You've talked a lot about, you know, incorporating green areas. You've talked about where can materials be reused or refitted. Can you already see with the project managers change in how highways project would be approached now versus, say, 10 years ago?
Yeah, completely, because the way we design has totally changed because we've now got that element of sustainability. Don't get me wrong, there's still an element of price that's involved.
Yeah.
But price was the driving factor. Who can do it the cheapest? Who can do it with the best quality? And that is how it always ran. Now, who's got the best environmental credentials? Who can do these carbon neutral projects? And like I was saying, it's never straightforward, but it's looking at the bigger picture of what impact you're having and the work you do. What are we actually adding to that local area by doing this? And where Marlborough is now starting to step outside of the box is we'll build a footpath, and then in that local area, we'll also provide some trees and we'll do some green space integration in that local area that's nowhere near the footpath. But you've got to look at, we will do a piece of work on a footpath, but what are we actually providing for that local area? It's bigger than the footpath, and what more can we be doing? But the challenges we've always got is we work mostly in London. London is very built up. There is not a lot of spaces for new parks. And that is where the design now needs to get a lot smarter. The design needs to incorporate a lot more. We do think, oh, big parks and stuff like that. It's simple things that when we put benches into local areas, how can we integrate greenery into the benches? It's little small things like that that you need to tick
These
off.
Interventions are important.
Yeah, you need to get the bigger picture. And when the design is constantly evolving, you know, no design will ever be the same as the other, no piece of road, you know, no influences are going to be the same, you know, the external factors of where you're working, but that's where it's really evolving.
I think this goes back to what you were saying at the beginning, which is you need the councils or the public realm, government, to be requiring it, because otherwise that's the carrot, I guess, or the stick and the carrot.
Yeah.
You've got companies like Marlborough Highways who are looking at every way it can be factored into the way it operates, the way it designs. But you also need then the suppliers to really focus on how can they manufacture or produce the materials or the products as sustainably as possible.
Yeah, exactly.
So all three have to work together to get to the same point. Because we're a private industry supplying a public contract often, you need private and public to be able to work towards the same goals. It's not like the NHS where it's all public, basically. And so how can suppliers support you then? I think I'm asking a question that I know the answer to.
Yeah, with their own innovation. And so as a business, yeah, we now do environmental audits on our suppliers. So as a business, we were kind of tick boxing at points going, right, we want you to have this credential. And it was left at that because that was the industry standard.
So it'd be an ISO.
So 14,001, you've got to have it. We'd show the council.
Yeah.
Whoopie-doo.
Yeah.
But that then had to change because we were there like, well, we need to push them to do more and we need to set them to a higher standard than 14,001. 14,001, you know, every business will be in the same industry, that 14,001 will look very different. Just because you're accredited to a standard does not mean that is the end goal. We now go out to our big suppliers and do environmental audits. That's where we sit down and go, what are you doing as a business? What are you hoping to do? So, for instance, one of our recent ones that we went to was Aggregate Industries, little name drop there. But they turned around and through this audit, they've said, we have developed a carbon calculator. So now for every single bit of tonnage of material or curbs, because we went to their charc on their curb side of things, they said, for every curb you order, we can have a carbon footprint at the bottom to say what the carbon footprint was to source it and the exact carbon footprint to get it from their office up in Derby down to us in Essex. And with the conversion factors with the government where it's lacking, it's not specific. Steps like this is where we're going to overcome challenges like that.
Right.
When we're out there, you know, when we're doing these audits, it's we have got a policy to eliminate single-use plastics. As a business, you provide us products in shrink wrap, in plastic wrap, because that is the safest way to transport those materials. How can we together reduce those single-use plastics? Can you use a recycled plastic? You know, there's a lot of different steps that we can take. And through these audits, it's also checking, have you got the environmental sanctions? You know, have you got the correct permits to do the work you're doing? Do you report on your greenhouse gas emissions? Because if they're reporting on it all, they've got their own standards to meet. They've got to reduce their emissions. So as a business, we're now holding our suppliers to a higher standard than the bog standard 14,001. And through doing that, we are being the drivers.
And do you have a checklist then almost for your suppliers of what your expectation is?
Like I said, with the single-use plastics. And it's also at the same time, when we have conversations like this, I can't sit here and go, Marlborough is all singing and dancing. We're the only environmental people. We are the leaders. I am the best.
Yeah.
I think in days I can be, but you know. We have to also learn from others in our sector.
Yeah.
And when we go to our suppliers, you know, a lot of conversation sparks to, well, we are offering this to your competitor. And this is where Marlborough, we want to be the flagship in environmental, and I better hope that we are, you know, otherwise I think I'm going to be out of a job, because we want to strive, we want to be the leaders. But in order to do that, we also need to talk to our competitors and we need to have those relationships, because we will excel in one part, we'll do something quicker than others, but then there are points where they'll excel and go ahead of us. You know, it's an ongoing race between all of us, and we won't have all the answers as a business, but somebody else might. And, you know, you've just got to be willing to have open arms to that, and having those relationships with our suppliers, you know, it really starts engaging those conversations. And we go, can we have this? And they turn around and go, oh, we don't really know how to do that. They also have a lot of partnerships with others in our industry that may be able to provide the answers. So we're not always going to have the answers. We'd like to have them first. We want to be the leaders, and there will be things we definitely are in, but it's sustainability as a whole. We're kind of all in it together.
That's the goal, right? The goal is bigger than each of us individually.
Definitely.
Yeah. So then what would you like to be most proud of when you look back in 5 years' time? What would you like to have achieved at Marlborough?
Well, there's a lot to achieve in this business. And past the 5 years, there will still be more to go. There will still be more to go in 20 years' time. But me personally, I'd like to have an electric car. I have a BMW diesel at the moment.
Right, yes.
We've all got to admit our shortcomings here.
I love how transparent you are.
But you have to be. I can't afford an electric car at the moment. You have to be a realist with this side. So I would like an electric vehicle for myself. I'd need to also have a home where I could have an electric charger, you know. So it's never black and white. It's always entertaining. But like I said, it's behaviour change. If I could get every employee across the business, this is also including subcontractors, because we subcontract some of our work out. Everybody that works for us or is involved with us to have one conscious thought of sustainability, whether that be recycling, choosing to walk, donating your clothes to a clothes bank. It's not as black and white as getting an electric car that's going to cost you a fortune. Let's be realistic. There is the small things that you donating your clothes to a clothes bank, you are sustainably helping the environment. You're also, as part of the sustainability umbrella, you're helping others as well. And it's the small things like that. At the moment, we've got a McDonald's just down the road. I'm guilty of going to said McDonald's. The only thing I'm not guilty of is the coffee cups, because a lot of people realise that you cannot recycle the coffee cups in a normal recycling bin because they've got cornstarch in them. They have to go to a designated recycling waste facility that accepts it. I would love if I would spot one of our employees just taking a reusable mug down there. You know, it will never be asking the world of everybody, but you imagine if everybody just did one
nature.
Small thing.
Yeah, change the mindset.
How much of a big impact would a small thing have if everybody was to do it? Because you can have one person do one big thing. I could turn around, I could go get a Tesla tomorrow. Or you can have the buy-in of everybody else. And you think, if everybody in Marlborough can have those thoughts, they can go home, their partners, their children, their cousins, you know, they can then share that on. And that's where it starts at Marlborough, but becomes bigger than Marlborough. That sounded really philosophical, didn't it?
Oh, my goodness. But it's a really important point. I think we focus on the corporate and the kind of the big numbers. And you know, we've talked about materials. We've gone from the sort of the big to the network effect of just changing the way everyone thinks. Because I think it's very easy as an individual to say, well, companies, you know, they're the ones that are producing all of this carbon dioxide. But actually, as individuals, we play a really, really significant part. So I think that's a really good, tangible point to end on.
It felt like I was giving a philosophical speech. It was getting
important.
Quite deep. I want everybody to change the world.
No, but it is important. And your role wouldn't be your role if you didn't feel that way, or you wouldn't be in your role.
Yeah.
I've got three quick fire questions that we ask everybody. So I'd love to ask you why you do what you do and what do you love most about it?
I do what I do because I've always known in my life that I've wanted to have a job with meaning. Every job everyone does has a meaning, it has a purpose, but I wanted to be part of something that was bigger than myself. I'm very much a people person. You know, I took the back end of a donkey off,
yep.
I really would. This is a role, and there's very similar roles like this, that I basically have a passion in myself, and my job is to share and get other people to buy into that passion, to buy into me, to buy into my ideology, the ideology of sustainability. And at points, I've got to admit, at points I don't love my job, because when you get this level of knowledge, you get into the level of it, you understand climate change and how that's really going to impact the earth and our future generations. It's horrifying. It really is. And to know I've done a small part to resolve that, that's one of the most gratifying feelings in the world.
And so what then is one thing that landscape architects and the landscape architecture profession do right now to help the climate disaster? You've got the ears of a lot of landscape architects right now.
Yeah, so like I said earlier, to have a conscious thought of, if they saw a design and the council said this road's, you know, it's knackered, if they could stop and just think, what, is there a better way of doing it? Because the most obvious way, relay the road.
Rip it up, relay it.
If they can have a thought to go, actually, it's going to probably take me maybe half an hour longer to come up with another design, but for it to have environmental elements to it. And I'm not saying everybody needs to wake up and think of the environment and go to sleep thinking of the environment, but to have that little pause and that conscious thought towards it, that would be enough.
Well, it's thinking of repurpose, refit, reuse, rather than start again.
Like you said, it's materials are used, what can we actually do with the road, and does it necessarily need to be ripped up to improve it?
And lastly, if you could put a bench in one spot in the world, where would it be and why?
I used to go up to the Peak District quite a lot, and when you get up to the top, there's not a lot of benches. So to be able to sit on a bench and have no chatter, no noise. I'm not a city person. I live in a city. I'm very much a country bumpkin. So to have a bench, you know, in the Peak District and on the top of the mountains where you've just got yourself and a bit of peace, that would be ideal.
Lovely. That's a lovely vision. Thank you so much, Fiona. Thank you for coming in and being really honest and open about the challenges, but also the exciting things that you're doing and that Marlborough Highways is doing. Thanks so much.
No worries. Thank you, Catherine.